G'day team, hope you're great. Welcome to another installment of The You Project. This is an intro before the intro. Yep, I know, you're welcome. Anna Faringa, friend and TYP alumni, came back and we had a great chat. This is just to let you know, ended up being really long. So this is part one of two bits. Enjoy, love your guts. G'day Groovers, welcome to another installment of the world's best podcast as voted by my mum, Mary Harper, and three of her friends. Melissa, has your mother ever listened to one episode of The You Project?
I think she might have a while back.
Well, come on.
I think she might have, yeah.
She might have listened to one.
No, I think she's listened to bits and pieces.
What's your mum's first name? What's your mum's first name for the audience?
Terry. She's discovered how to listen to a podcast on her phone, although...
Hey, Tezza, get on board, love. Your daughter is a crucial component of this wildly successful extravaganza of a podcast. In fact, without her, it wouldn't exist. So, Terry, get on board. Anna Faringa, does your mum even know what? Well, firstly, is your mum still with us? You got to check that out. Yeah.
Yes, mate, she's still with us.
Yeah, well, you got to check. You don't want to be too presumptuous because I have fucked up a few conversations in the past. Does your mum know what a podcast is?
Mate, my mum only learnt to text about 4 years ago, and that's pretty much the limit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still have to do her online shopping for her. She doesn't know how to buy something off a website. Bless.
Bless her little socks. Well, Ron and Mary, a.k.a. my folks, have never listened to 4 minutes of any podcast, including mine. And mum still tells people I talk to audiences on the wireless.
Close enough.
I'm like, well, I used to be on the wireless, mum. Not anymore. How have you been?
Mate, I'm pretty good, actually. Yeah, I'm really good. Busy.
Now, of course, can you just so I don't have to, can you just explain to our audience who are meeting you for the first time what you do, your background, all that stuff, please? Just, in fact, can you do your bio for us while I have a sip of tea? Thank you.
No worries. Do you want the official one? Well, g'day, everyone. I'm glad to be back again. I am actually Craig Harper's favourite guest, which has been declared. You can't lie with numbers. So my name's Anna Faringa, and I spend a bit of time with the crew at The You Project. And what we do, or what I do, is I've got a very big passion and investment in organisational psychology. What does that sound like in a less wanky version is I basically go in and stop people getting crook at work, unnecessarily crook at work, through working with workplaces, making sure all of their mental health systems and processes are in place. But also with that comes a large lashing of understanding community and mental health as a whole. So I'm pretty broad in the process, but where I spend most of my time is basically getting in and making sure workplaces are safe to work and to stop mental injuries from happening.
Perfect. Thank you so much. How does, pursuant to your previous description of your job, Your Honour, how does the crookness show up? Like, what are the, I mean, mental health issues, but do you want to give us a few specifics of what's happening right now in terms of the biggies?
Oh, yeah, and what an interesting time to talk about it, right? That's why I led with the age-old hated word of busy, but, you know, pandemics and the like have really put pressure on not just the whole community at whole, but workplaces are really feeling it, right? We've slipped into remote and hybrid working. So signs were already there before it took the pandemic to make it actually bloody obvious vulnerable people are, right? So what that would look like, Harps, would look like someone shifting in their behaviour, getting the shits, biting your head off, maybe withdrawing, maybe getting emotional, maybe looking at talking about a lot of things in a negative way. And then on the flip side, if you're not seeing getting direct behavioural indications, it can be quite physical, as in performance-based. So more often than not, a couple of academics will argue with me that people tend to overwork when they're stressed, and they do. But my argument back is people would always generally underperform. Because people are working more doesn't mean they're working more to quality. So that's my rebuttal for that. So long-winded, inarticulate response, but in summary, change in behaviour or a drop in performance is pretty much where we'll see people start to get crook, or the crookness.
The Crookness. That could be the name of the episode, Exploring the Crookness with Anca Faringa or Anna Faringa. You're right in that, right? The interesting thing about stress is, one, it doesn't manifest in only one way. It manifests in a plethora of ways. And also there's no one-step fucking cure or remedy or even one-step kind of process to recognize it, because sometimes it's very subtle and it does manifest, you know, behaviorally, socially, emotionally, physiologically, psychologically. It's a pretty big construct, you know. And as a, like working in that kind of space, and I know it's not your job to fix people, it's your job to empower and coach and help them to help themselves. Where do you, are you, one of the things that challenges me with psychology, there's the right word, harps. I was going to say annoys, but annoys is the wrong word. Well, with psychology, there's so many frameworks, right? There's this framework and the different processes and the different philosophies, whereas I think it's not that clear cut. How much of yours is very kind of processy driven and framework driven, and how much of your work is you just fucking being in the moment and you being 90% human and 10% psychology, you know, where you're just at the coalface and just intuiting it as you go?
Look, that's a really good question, Harps, and I'm going to have to be brutally honest. You can get someone, anyone, to help you personally or to bring him into an organisation to clean up the shit that's happening, right? But in saying that, there's a lot of cowboys or cowgirls, I need to be, you know, polite along the gender continuum here, that go in there and they have past lived experience and they go in there and they tell stories, and that's not very helpful. It's inspiring, but it's not helpful. So we really do need to take a little bit of that psychological basis, the theorems, the methodologies.
Yep.
But we don't need to make it all about that, because mental health is confusing and complex enough, and us as humans like to really overcomplicate it because we're scared of it, right? Mm. So we're either running from it or making up inaccurate theories about it, and that's the storm in the teacup that we find ourselves. So I would say about 30% Harps would be, because I won't go anywhere where it's not evidence-based. I can be as human and as practical and as intuitive as I like, but I need to put pieces on. Yeah. Pieces on science. And then the rest of it, 70% would be human, because that's the problem. You yourself being, and I'm going to, give you a compliment, being a highly intelligent and driven guy and looking at the interpersonal and the external of how humans exist and how we learn and thrive and dive, is that there's no point addressing a complex topic in a complex way.
Mm.
So there is very much a lack of human approach where people are going to buy in, understand, trust, and acknowledge that, A, this is an issue, and, B, there is solutions out there. But it's just all in the delivery, right? Mm. It's all about how we choose to educate people around it.
Mm.
And there's a lot of fluff out there, but there's a lot of high practicality as well.
And that is what, thank you, that's very articulate and very well explained. And that is what I love, not because of me, but no, it's true. But you're laughing at me when I give you a fucking compliment. But what I love about this show, and not because of me, but because of the guests that we get, is that it is very user-friendly. It's very user-friendly. We have very few guests. We have a few now and then. But I kind of bring them down, as in bring down the, you know, to make it more not bring them down emotionally, but to go, yeah, cool. What does that mean though? Like, can you Craig, because I've got no idea what you're talking about. Because I know if I'm sitting here going, yeah, I'm barely hanging on, there's a few others thinking the same, right? So, you know, to be able to talk about what are some complicated things, without oversimplifying it or without being misleading, but to share psychology / science / research / evidence-based knowledge, blah, 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 which is all fundamental and foundational, but to share that in a way where the bloke who's driving his truck to Echuca goes, oh, fuck, that's me. Yep. Yeah, I get that. I do that. Oh, how do I change that? I'll keep listening. Fuck, I'm going to meditate. oh, I don't have to sit in a caftan in a corner and fucking chant. Awesome. Oh, I can do it in my truck. Awesome.
Yep.
Right. This is the beauty of user-friendly stories and ideas, where we're not just, I'm not just pulling academics onto the show to just talk about their fucking doctoral thesis or whatever, but rather, okay, what do you know? Now make that helpful and understandable and resonant for those of us who need that.
Absolutely. Help.
You spoke before about, you know what I loved? I wrote down this sentence you said. You said inspiring but not helpful. So that is such a fucking interesting thing to say, because I always look at the value that I might provide. Let's stay with me, because then I'm not throwing anyone else into the picture or under the bus. I say to people, and Melissa's heard me do this 1,000 times. So we'll do a 3-hour workshop when we're, you know, in rooms. I still do it online, but especially in rooms, like we use Deakin Lecture Theatre in Melbourne, which holds around 700. And we, every time we run a thing, we fill it. And at the end I go, all right, put up your hand if you're more inspired than you were 3 hours ago. And pretty much every hand goes up. Put up your hand if you're more motivated, if you're more focused, and you're in a better headspace. Pretty much every hand goes up, because it's been great. There's been great energy. There's been laughter. There's been stories. There's been light bulbs. We're all on fire. We're all hip. Da, 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 da. And then I say, well, guess what? That's going to pass, right? But let me tell you, it's Sunday now. By Tuesday, you will have forgotten most of what I said. That feeling that you're now in, that state you're now in, will be probably 47 hours old. And what I care about is what you do when you're not inspired. What I care about is what you do when you're not in the zone, when it's not fun, quick, easy, and painless. But at the same time, Your Honor, I feel like I'm presenting a case. But at the same time, you do want people to come in and inspire, but also there needs to be great ideas and strategies that people can use straight away, right?
Absolutely. Everyone loves a story, right? There's very few humans on the planet that don't love a story. But there's no, if we're here to help people, if we're here to give them something that they can hear today and apply tomorrow, That's one of my main sayings in the work that I do, is there's no point me coming in and spending hours and days and weeks. We need to be able to give people skills, particularly in this complicated space, to firstly understand and then know what to do tomorrow. I want to form easy habits in a complicated area. And the reason why it is complicated is one of the number one reasons why people would switch off, not listen, not attend, is because it's a bloody hard subject. It's a subject that impacts so many of us, and it's got so many tendrils of bits and pieces of what humans fear attached to it: vulnerability, embarrassment, self-honesty, self-worth. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't look at that. So you're bowling into, like you, Harps, walking into a keynote, into a workshop, and people, I mean, you're lucky, Harps, because people sign up to go and see you.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, companies pay to have me come in and work with people that don't necessarily want to work in this space. They're made to do it. So I've got that extra barrier to get in there and say, guess what, guys? 1 in 5, if not more, of you now are going to be or are currently experiencing what I'm about to talk about, and how I'm going to show you how to help yourself and help other people. Mm. So there's that extra layer of resistance in there. So it's really important that we take something, spit it out in a way that's palatable, that we can digest it as humans, and then use it. Because otherwise there's no point me being there. And there's no point them taking time out of their precious, busy, overworked, stressed out days unless they take something away that's going to fix the overworked, stressed out days.
I reckon once you get to a certain level of competence, which I would think, in all humility, you and I are probably there because we're old as fuck and we've been doing it for a long time. Well, I'm old as fuck.
Yeah, I'll take that.
You're a spring chicken, right? But I actually think, like, I know that, and by the way, I do corporate stuff as well, but that is the challenge for us, is you can walk into a room which is somewhere, and like when we talk about the temperature of the room, listeners, We're talking about whether or not it's a cold audience or a hot audience. Hot audience is someone that likes me, loves me, and they've come to hear me and they've paid to hear me, and that's a hot or a warm audience, and that makes life pretty easy as a speaker. But as Anna was saying, you know, like the other night I did a gig for Hewlett Packard. Melissa, what night was that?
Tuesday night,
Hewlett Packard, 38 countries, 1,000 people. And how's this, Anna? So 1,000 people-ish, I don't know how many it was a lot, but at 38 countries and no heads, Anna. So I'm sitting in my studio like I am now, having less feedback, talking with hundreds and hundreds of people than I am with you, talking to one and Melissa, two people. And yeah, like you go, this is the hardest gig in terms of this kind of speaking. But I think as a speaker, as a facilitator, or even anyone who's listening, who's even a parent, a coach, a school teacher, I think the real challenge is not so much can I share thoughts and ideas and stories. That's the start, but then can I empower people to consistently apply it? Because it's so much about the application, not the inspiration. Because I know I can inspire people and be funny and tell silly stories and all of that and create connection. I know that not because I'm brilliant, but because I've got a track record and I've been doing it for a very long time. But I even say to the audiences, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad you enjoyed me. I'm glad we had fun. But what I really care about is what you do from now. What you do from now. Yep. What's your kind of strategy around, because all you can do, I mean, even you, who you're brilliant, but you turn up and you talk for a few hours, then you fuck off.
Yep.
What's your strategy to try to keep the momentum happening beyond the Anna experience?
Well, it really depends on the type of engagement, right? If someone just wants to go, okay, Anna, come in and talk to 250 leaders around what general mental health management looks like and what their basic responsibilities are. I always say, well, what do you want to get out of that? Is it an idea? Are you going to generate a strategic plan? What is that going to look like? And if they can't give me a lot of feedback about where they want to take that experience, then I have to be comfortable with the fact that I am just going to be a ticker box. Mm. I'm going to turn up and I'm going to maybe inspire that little bit. Maybe put some ideas in people's heads, and maybe two or three or 10 or 15 of those 250 leaders might actually have a mental health conversation in the next week. Mm. So that's about understanding my metrics, right? But when we're talking programming, right, that's where the gold is, right? That's where you stay and you coach and you embed, because they're you know, and I've got to be careful here, because I did a thought bubble the other week around the fact that people aren't engaging in anything mental health because they don't want it to be a ticker box. They want it to be the perfect program now. And sometimes we just don't have that luxury. So I've got to be careful here. If they want to employ me as a ticker box ideas generator, that's fine. That's the service done and dusted. But the programming is where it comes in. And that's where you are going to get sustainable change. That's where you're going to really start getting people to go, okay, mental health, whether it's outside work or inside work, isn't that complicated.
Mm.
Yeah, it's fucking scary, but there are a lot of more people going through it. There's a lot more solutions and there's a lot more answers. And guess what? They're all attainable and achievable.
Yeah.
So that's where it comes in. But, you know, people don't develop capability and confidence in a session. They need to spend time and they need to be, you know, I don't want to use the word convinced, but that's the truth. Some people need to be convinced, not because they don't believe in the concept, but they don't believe in their capability to apply it.
Mm.
So
I've spoken a few times recently with guests about where we're banging on about all the stuff we're banging on about, which is what we do. there's this component, and I discovered this when I was 18 years old, working on the gym floor, writing programs for people. You know, here's how you lift, here's how you stretch, here's how you run, here's how you use a bloody whatever, a treadmill. We'd talk to them fundamentally. I'd talk to them about, you know, food and goals and structure and process and execution and all that stuff, right? In my very immature, uneducated, unsophisticated way, which kind of got better over time. But you're talking to people about how to improve something about themselves or their body or their thinking, habits, behaviors, outcome, right? But ultimately, the compliance would be, you know, low. And I kind of got to a point where I went, I can tell people what to do, but there's this component that people, it's almost like this X factor of people like the idea of, for example, let's just use getting in shape as an idea. And it's not really about the physiology, everyone. It's about the process and the thinking and the consistency and all that. But the truth is, a lot of people like the idea of fill in the blank, but they're not ready to do the work. In other words, they're not ready. They're not ready. Like I literally had, in the old days when I started PTing, right? So I started gym instructing at 18, but I started personal training at 24, 23 maybe, 1986, before anyone else was doing it in Australia anyway. But by the time I was a year into personal training and I was 6 or 7 years into the fitness industry. So before I would take on new clients, I would sit them down and I would talk to them and I would go through what was required to create. I'd go, well, do you want short-term change or long-term change? Everyone's like, well, long-term, you know, okay. So then we'd talk about long-term thinking, habits, behaviors, all this stuff. And then I'd go through what's required and probably 1 in 10 would get to the point where they go, oh, yeah, I don't want to do it. I'm like, all right, see ya. Because they didn't want to commit to what was actually required to get where they wanted to go. Like They wanted to see me 3 days a week. I'll wave my fucking wand. They'll look like Mr. Olympia or Miss Olympia on Tuesday. They'll eat whatever they want. They'll give me a 4 out of 10 effort and they'll get an 11 out of 10 result. And I'm like, well, one, I'm not working with you because I can't. And two, it doesn't work like that. Like the thing is that the shit that people need to do to really transform their life, et cetera, habits, behavior, thinking, body, relationships, health, it's just not fun a lot of the time. But when you're trying to sell shit, programs and books and whatever, keynotes, people don't want to hear that. So they'd just rather turn to the bloke or the woman who's selling the 2-minute abs. Do you find that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like in any kind of game, but for the sake of this podcast, you know, I'll stick in my lane here. People just want the easy answer, right? And there's I'm going to chuck out a word here, and you know, tell me if this isn't palatable for our listeners.
Yeah.
But there's really no point. I mean, you talk about personal impact, right? Someone comes to you and they want to get thinner, fitter, faster, whatever it is. They want personal impact. I'm working in a space where I'm helping create social impact, right? And so there's no point, you know, plug and playing in an area that is so misunderstood, so underfunded, so confusing, but yet so detrimental to the future and ongoing health preservation of humanity.
Mm.
So there's no point going in and working with any kind of organization. And this draws back to your question about how do you keep people accountable, is you've got to run some metrics, right? You've got to measure yourself. And there's two pieces to this. One, the organization gets to champion what they've improved because you can't argue with numbers. And secondly, they get to validate what works, right? There's plenty of plug and players out there. They'll go out there, they'll give you 2 or 3 training sessions and then send them a check, off you go. Whereas you've got to spend some time to make this, to create a social impact. And then secondly, make that organization capable to do it themselves. I don't want to hang around in any organization forever. I love all my clients, but not that much. You know, there's got to be an exit point, right? But you can't exit until you're capable. It's a capability piece.
Yeah.
You know, because we can talk about the philosophy of it, Hubs. We can talk about why people want to change and how they change thoughts, behaviors, you know, psychology, whatever. But at the end of the day, where companies and the face of mental health is becoming a bigger and more pressing issue. I mean, there's been more legal mandates released in April this year. So that's the next piece that we've got to fight against is I'm going to be working with a bunch of people that have to do it and not want to do it.
Yeah,
and that's a whole nother ball game, right?
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. But the answer is you do your metrics. You talk to the people. Did you have a mental health conversation? Did you notice any signs? How effective was your conversation? Did you follow it through to the process? Did they maintain, did they stay at work? Did they go off crook? If they went off crook, how'd you get them back? Did they stay at work? All of that's measurable, right? And then we can say, okay, well, this actually works. People are applying or following the application. I mean, if we can just put almost a systematized approach to a complex subject, more people will do it. They're just looking for a bit of clarity.
Yeah,
everyone's got the capability to do it. We just don't have the confidence or the permission.
Yeah, people do love structure. They love structure, accountability, process. And I think as long as you've got a structure that you can nuance people's individuality around that core structure or program, because I always think when I'm talking, this is literally what I think. If I'm talking to 100 people in a room, I even have an awareness right now. I go, I'm talking to 100 different egos, attitudes, personalities, belief systems, backgrounds, cultures, religious upbringings. Mm-hmm. Like that's what I'm talking to. I'm talking to this potpourri of internal shit, you know. So it's much more broad than it seems. Oh, you're up there, you just tell them. Because well, you and I both know you can say one thing and the responses range from enlightenment to outrage.
Yeah.
Depending on what that person tells themselves about and then what they believe about what they think you were saying.
That's right. It's very
subjective. I've had people, the first time I did this or the first time I went, I was young. I was maybe 30. I was just starting to do corporate and I'd done a gig and I won't even say what I did because you probably definitely can't say it now, but it wasn't bad at all. I'm gonna say what I'm not gonna say it, but anyway,
you've changed.
Yeah. Oh fuck, I just get, you know, the one person that's gonna send me an email anyway. So I said something and it was in the context of a story I was telling and I impersonated a person, right? You'll probably figure it out from there. But anyway, the person I was impersonating is a friend that I love, right? So there was zero malice. And I got really good feedback. At the end of it, I stood at the back of the room. People came up, shook my hand, asked me questions, told me they loved it. And this one person waited till the end to just fucking open up about how horrible I was. And I'm like, oh, like I just had not 99, but seemingly 99 people go, well done, thumbs up. And then one person go, you're shit. And obviously the only person that impacted me was the one.
Yeah.
So then I rode home on the motorbike, just feeling like I'm a fucking terrible human. And then I spoke to someone about it, one of my clients who was an older, wiser dude than me, which was everyone, one of my PT clients. And he's like, yeah, of course. I'm like, well, tell me about that. And then we just unpack that. So I'm glad I had someone a bit older and wiser. But that's the dance. You know, that's what you do when you put yourself in front of any group and you have an idea or a story or a message. That's the danger or that's the potential every time.
Of course it is. And then look at both our fields. They're personal.
Yeah.
Right. You're talking about people's health and existence, and I'm talking about people's mental health and existence. It's all personal. It's all subjective. I want to get a bit bold here and go, I would have to start questioning myself if I didn't piss someone off. I would have to start questioning myself. I'd have to start questioning the information, the material, the way I'm delivering. Someone is, because if you haven't bled a couple of hearts from a negative way, are you getting your message out there? Because I love to use this word. I'm out here to disrupt. So I actually expect people to disagree or to have a very strong emotional reaction to what I and how I am showing people how to behave, respond with mental health, in, and particularly in highly political places like workplaces, right? So that's one thing. I take the negative as something that I need to look at, not to improve in myself, but if I don't get negative, how do I keep getting it? Because I want it. I think the best learnings come from negative.
So a question from left field, but I'm going to tie it back into what we're talking about.
Is it about my hair?
It's not about your hair, but well done. What's your kind of understanding of the role of a person's level of, and I know there's a scale, but a person's level of introversion or extroversion with how they cope in, let's say, lockdown or pandemics or, you know, all the stuff that do you, what do you, and again, this is just, by the way, everyone, not advice, not a prescription, just two humans talking. What's your thinking around that on the scale from complete introvert to over the top annoying as fuck extrovert, and the way that that might influence or impact their experience of what we're going through now, especially like in Victoria where, you know, we've been locked down for 240 days or something.
Yeah. Great question. Well, firstly, I think there's a lot of misinterpretations around what extrovertism and introvertism is. Basically, it is where you draw energy, right? And a lot of people are like, well, you're introverted because you're shy, because, you know, people freak you out, because you're incapable of having a conversation, and all of these, you know, bullshit labels and stigma that gets attached. But really, that's that they have to, they like a quiet space to draw energy to then project out socially, right? And extroverts draw their energy primarily from other people's energy, right? Which means that puts them into a social space a lot of the time. That's where they feel most energetic. I'm high on extrovert scale. I go absolutely bananas when I spend too much time on my own, if any. Don't get me wrong, I do have the moments of appreciating solitude, but it only has to be very minimal for me. Otherwise, I am back on the phone, back on Zoom. Who wants to meet up? Who wants to have a Saturday afternoon wine? I've been on a screen for nearly 10 hours a day for 5 days a week, and I want to jump back on that screen just to get my energy fixed, right? Because the telly's not doing it for me. The exercise sometimes does it for me, but that doesn't give me the energy that I need, that stimulation to be able to talk and generate. That's where I've sort of put in to place, like, there's thrivers and divers, right, in this whole lockdown space. And everyone's like, oh, gosh, the extroverts, they're going to really, really struggle, and the introverts are going to love it, right? But that's not actually what evidence is telling us, right? Everyone's got a different blend and a different experience as far as coping in a lockdown environment. An extrovert will source out any kind of social energy they can. So they're actually doing quite well. It's not just they miss the physicality, but then so do introverts. We all miss the physicality of being with a human, shaking a hand, giving a cuddle, having a kiss, whatever. But it is really about how people can play out their energy agenda in the day. And again, Harps, this will probably handball back to you in the space of how people choose and are aware in their consciousness of what draws energy, healthy energy, and what doesn't. So that can determine what someone's day is going to look like.
It's more and more we're becoming, and this is no revelation to you, but just in generally speaking, you know, we're becoming much more aware that human health, you know, it's about 100 things. You know, yeah, sleep matters. Yep. So does having a hug, like you said. So does drinking some water. So does having meaningful conversations. So does eating high quality nutrition. So does moving your body, and not just moving your body, but different kinds of movement. So does putting your fucking feet in the dirt and walking in the dirt. So does walking in the rain for me with rain on your face. Fuck, I love it. So does lying on the floor with your puppy, just fucking squeezing his face, his fucking little face. You know, it's like, there are so many, so does meditation, so does communing and connecting with God, the creator, the divine, whoever, whatever that is for you, you know, and like we used to go, well, as long as you eat well and move your body. No, Brian, no, that's so fucking narrow-minded, because some people have got awesome bodies, but they're emotional and psychological train wrecks, which actually means now they don't sleep, now their immune system's compromised, and now their body's not awesome at all because it's in a constant, you know, kind of toxic state on a hormonal level. They're producing all these stress hormones and now they're crook, despite the fact that they're running 9 times a week and doing 1,000 push-ups a day, you know. It's just, it is so interesting when I talk to people about, you know, sometimes there'll just be like a little thing where you and I were talking this morning, and we won't open the door all the way, but we'll open it a bit.
And go for it, mate. I'm not shy. You can tell a story.
Really?
Yeah, the listeners will love it.
Yeah. So so I rang Onka Paringa earlier and I said, Onka, I said, do you want to have a chat with me? What is Onka Paringa? Isn't it a blanket or something?
I don't know, but they're going to get a lot of Google hits.
Melissa, can you Google Onka Paringa? I think they're blankets from the old days or something. Awesome. So anyway, I rang Anna Faringa, and we were just chatting, and you were telling me you were just inhaling some psyllium husk, right? Yeah. And you said, per my advice. Melissa, what is it?
They are blankets by the looks of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Like goose down. The little duna covers.
On a blanket.
Yeah, doing covers.
I don't know,
sexy halves.
Yeah. Boring. Yeah. Well, anyway. But anyway, bottom line is
I was eating the husk.
Bottom line is Anna is not pooing like a champion. And I have done
Nowhere near it.
I did one of my most popular, you know, it's not in the top 3, but it did really well. I'd say in the top 10. Videos ever was me talking about how to poo effectively. Like, I think it was called How to Be a Champion Pooer, something like that.
Yeah.
We had like 40,000 views in 24 hours. I'm thinking, fuck, the world needs this. but anyway, you and I were talking about that. And it's funny, like, and everyone's gone, how did we get to shit? Like, we're just talking about all these deep philosophical, psychological constructs. And now he's back to, you know, pooing.
We're giving him a cognitive break, mate.
Yeah, we're giving him a cognitive break. That's right. But the funny thing is, when you are constipated, and that's about half the population pretty regularly, right? When you are constipated, it has an impact on your whole, I mean, obviously, you know, from a physical, you don't feel great, but it has an impact on your gut biome. It has an impact, the subsequent impact on all the other systems of your body, on your cognitive function, on your energy, and on your immune system and on your overall health. You know, and then you go, and that's just one thing. And I said to you, how much water are you drinking? And you said, oh, I'm better than I used to be. And people always say that to me. And what that means is not enough and fuck all. And then you proceeded to tell me probably less than a liter a day.
Hey, don't take my liter away. I said a liter.
A liter. Fuck. My cat drinks a liter.
Yeah, it's a liter.
Yeah, it's not nearly enough anyway. And I'm not going to give a prescription for how much water, but fair to say, everyone, if you don't drink enough water, then you need to for a range of reasons. Your brain's 90% water. There's a good reason. Your blood's 90% water. There's another good reason. You're 70% water. That's another good reason. And if you are dehydrated, nothing, not one bit of your body can work optimally, not one bit. And it's the easiest fucking thing to fix. But anyway, we were talking about that. And it's funny how, you know, so many things from whether or not you're dehydrated to whether or not you work in an office environment that you like can affect your health to whether or not you work with people that you love or hate. You know, it's interesting how many things actually can set us back or propel us forward.
But it's also interesting, Harps, too, just how often the general community view the term health. Right. So I this is just a stat I'm going to pull out of my ass, right? But this is based on my 18 years of experience working in rooms in corporates and non-corporates. When I say, how healthy are you? Most people go, oh yeah, I'm pretty healthy. And I'm like, okay, how healthy do you think your mind is? And I get the strangest looks. They're like, well, that's something different. And I'm like, well no, it's not. Your brain's in your body. Your self-perception thought process comes from your brain. If your brain's not working ultimately, do you think that can affect your mental health? And they're like, oh, no, something really shit's got to happen to you before you have bad mental health. So just to dive in and to connect in that conversation with you, there's a saying that I always say is the majority of organizations, the majority of communities, Harps, are only 50% safe because we're only looking after 50% of our actual healthy existence.
Mm.
You said someone can be fit as a fiddle, doing their weights, eating their husk, shitting like champions.
Yeah.
But if they're not looking after their mind in any shape, way, or form, they're going to go down.
Yes.
And people don't understand that. A lot of people don't draw the dots or don't connect the dots.
That's right. And then we swing away from psychology, your area, more to physiology, my area.
Yeah.
And not one or the other, both. And we go, yeah, you can meditate like a fucking champion, but if you're living on cheeseburgers, you're going to die next week, you know, or not really, but you know what I'm saying? It's like meditation is good, or mental health practices, or your own, that's good too. And it's crucial. And we need to manage our mind and our brain. We do.
Yep.
But if you're having 3 hours sleep a night, that's not helping. That's not helping your mental, because the physiology affects the psychology and vice versa. Like everything, 100%. Like there's a two-way exchange.
Absolutely. What I mean, other than people just being taking conscious choice not to sleep well, what do you think keeps us awake at night? Right? Yeah. Our thought processes, and as you said, can be linked by poor physical state, or if you've got a bunch of shit that you're not dealing with properly, you know, your world, Harps, was, this is how you eat well. This is how you exercise well. This is how you have to set it up to do it properly. You got to exercise the mind as well. And I'm not saying that everyone has to go and put on that caftan and go meditate. I'm not saying that everyone has to go out and be in nature daily. Everyone's got their own gig. It's just frightening the way, and particularly now with this hybrid lockdown kind of environment, just how much time we're not giving ourselves.
Mm.
To look after our physical and mental health, because 100%. Everyone's sitting at home justifying, I'm at working from home, therefore I must work harder. And more and more people are drinking more alcohol. And these are verified stats, okay? They come from the Brain and Mind Center, Beyond Blue, Black Dog, is that more people, over 50% more people in a study of 10,000 people between April and September last year, are drinking more booze, moving less, worried about the future more. I mean, Lifeline's receiving, New South Wales just capped their record of most calls to Lifeline, but yet there's other studies that are going around saying, well, what are you doing to run an intervention in that? No one's doing anything. Because we're sitting in victim mentality of having our, you know, however anyone perceives it, it's a political topic, but having your rights taken away, not being able to go outside and so forth. So people are in this stagnant day of just getting up, and they think that just getting to bed at night, having spent a little bit of time with their family, flatmates, whatever, and doing their job and going to bed is enough. And that's what's the frightening piece of evolution that we're seeing, because we have no idea how to keep people safe in a hybrid environment.
All righty, team, we're going to take a short break there, and we're going to call this the end of part one, because as I said at the start of this, it ended up being quite the conversation. Have a great day. Have a great night. We'll be back tomorrow, or tomorrow, as the kids say, for part two.